Honorable members, as we are about to start the meeting, before probably one can elaborate more, I must say it's with regret that what we're exactly discussing, as we will reflect on the minutes last week, has just happened. And hopefully, as time goes on, this won't be another regrettable incident that is going to befall this country. The last time I checked was that in the incident that happened on Saturday, where a five-year-old fell on a disused mine shaft. By yesterday and this morning, he had not been found. Exactly what we're talking about in the East Rand, Bosberg specifically, it's an informal settlement called Jerusalem. And we were discussing this issue. In as much as we've dealt with it for many committees, but it was only last week that we had gone quite extensively in looking at what is it that will have to be done in order to speed up the process of the derelict and ownerless mines. And I'm sure even if we will look at it, we did raise the concern that this is something that poses a disaster that is possible to happen at any given moment. In fact, the bigger question is that whether that informal settlement itself is not built over disused mine. So beyond this incident, which is again, it will going to be a painful one if it goes the same route of the Lily Mine incident. I think we have to act and we must find a way to act quite decisively, because more could come if we don't address this matter. But again, I've said we'll need to get a report even from the department. But I can say that in my engagement with the acting DG, the report so far was that that mine was that shaft was closed, was sealed, but it seemed to have gone down because of the heavy rains. Which again will go back to that discussion we had last week on the extent and calculated cost, because all these shafts won't be the same by size. But also now, probably another question will arise: how do you make it a point that what is sealed has got no potential or possibility under natural causes to reopen? So we hope and wish that the boy will be discovered and recovered, and we just hope that everything possible will be done on this matter. The second point, which I think we'll have to talk to later on, just to share with members, so that in the event something comes through, is what one suspects or fears that is going to be a very highly congested program that we might find ourselves in. Looking on the time schedule, still have got a dilemma of how we're going to manage the tabling and the subsequent process of the committee on the issue of the APP's strategic plans as well as the budget. it seems we might find ourselves in a very awkward situation, and we will explain that even for the presentations themselves, because it seems now we have plenaries even on the dates that we are talking about. And if that is the case, it actually means the 2 days that were initially suggested on the program may not be sufficient, because it's a half a day for each of those 2 days. And we need to have a period where we'll have to adopt the report in the same period. And looking at the fact that the possible committee meeting that we have is the last one, will be on the 15th. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, we're coming, but I suppose the constituency work goes up to 21 April. And from 21 April, there is a public holiday of 27 April, and then there is a 1st of May, the 27th of April being on Thursday. So I think we will also explain why the dilemma with regards to this process of the budget and the APPs as well as the strategic plan. But on that note, we have work to do. We have requested, as honorable members will also recall, that we had undertaken a breakaway session to look at what is it that can be the task and work of the committee. And that allocated time has now come to pass. We need to look at what then becomes, or also what extent and what work has been done. Is there a need to refocus? Is there a need to relook? But most important is that we have done all 9 provinces, which actually means we may not have that luxury now of going to one province. We may have to look at specific programs that may require the committee to undertake. And I think we must also, even before we arrive at that, appreciate the manner in which honorable members were able to undertake this work. There is not even one, unlike others, there is not even one officer that I remember that we voluntarily decided that, looking at the size and so forth, we have to call it off. We have undertaken all of them. And I think we have made a meaningful impact. So we have asked Dr. Nicole to just look at the issues that might require follow-up on, to what extent the work that the committee has been doing. I must also preface that by saying there was some unique submission that the AG had given on the scores that as a committee we're supposed to be given on our performance. We don't have a tool. We don't have a measurement. We don't have a specific framework that we're working on. But I think it's also our duty from time to time to take stock and also attend to some of the outstanding issues that we can be able to identify and see to what extent we can be able to make finality on them. So on that note, can we get, are there any apologies?
Good morning, members. We have an apology from Ms. Mafolo. She is off sick.
Okay. There is an apology from... Honorable Jafta, he is attending that popular committee. That popular committee of vote of no confidence. The portfolio committee on health at 10. So at least we'll have a sense of what is obtaining here. I can encourage other members of other committees, but I hope Honorable Mokoena has not disappeared like the previous experience. It's been too long we've seen him in this committee. But I know that again there's another popular committee. I've seen him very consistently at the SABC inquiry committee. Maybe next time when I see him, I will tell him that this committee is still alive. I thought in that committee was assisting Mr. Honorable Ndlozi. So as a caretaker, he still belongs here. On that score, can we allow Dr. Nicole?
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Good morning, members. The presentation which I'm going to give now, which is it's quite short, but it's based on two reports that we were asked to compile, which we've been compiling sort of continually since 2015, trying to keep track of the issues that are covered by the committee in its meetings and which need follow-up. The document that's been distributed, it's called Information Requested by the Committee from DMR and its Entities. It deals not only with the requests to the DMR, but also with the information or recommendations that have been made by the committee in the BRRR reports since 2014 and which have not been brought to any resolution. So it's quite a long list of issues which I think members need to look at and reflect on. It's not really possible to summarize them without going through each individual issue. However, the purpose of the of this presentation now, is to review the outstanding issues from previous meetings and reports of the committees, to reflect on some research on the activities of the committee, which again we've been doing continually since 2015. That this report goes up until the end of 2016, and then to make a very tentative recommendation just to provide some focus for the results of the research. The reference point for the work of the committee has been the three-year operational plan, which was developed at the Breakaway Workshop at the Lord Charles Hotel in 2014. And this covered the three-year period from 2014, when the committee was inaugurated, up until 2016, 2017. So it's actually due for a reviewal, shall we say, at about this time. The operational plan, although members may not be fully aware of it, has been used to motivate for all of the oversight visits. We have to provide information we have to provide a motivation to Parliament to go on an oversight visit. And the committee objectives set here have been used for all of those oversight visits. And also it has provided direction for the committee in the meetings. I'm not going to go through the objectives, which we've written down in the presentation for your reference, because they cover all the familiar areas which the committee is aware of. There have been 70 meetings of this committee since it was founded in 2014 for the Fifth Parliament. And in analysing them, we've divided the sorts of issues into four types. Firstly, looking at what we call the programmed activities, which is really the activities which are prescribed by the programme of Parliament every year. We've looked at legislation, which is the other function of the committee, which has not taken up a lot of time for various reasons, It's the MPRDA bill here, which, on which there were six meetings. Then oversight follow-up, that's really the review of oversight reports. And then a particular issue focus, which is the 29 meetings, which have covered everything from the Lilly mine through to environmental affairs, all the topics that have been dealt with by the committee over this period. It's quite instructive to compare the fifth parliament with how the fourth parliament devoted its time, the parliamentary committee of the fourth parliament spent its time. And that is indicated on the graph there on the right. And we find again that programmed activities, they take up pretty much half of the activities of the committee. There was more time spent on legislation. That was because the previous committee had to deal with the MPRDA bill in its entirety and also the Geoscience Amendment Act. There were public hearings on the mining charter, which absorbed 15 meetings. Now, I should also mention that there were public hearings on the on illegal mining in 2009, and a whole series of public hearings on the MPRDA bill in 2013. So this graph actually understates the extent to which public hearings were involved in the work of the Committee of the Fourth Parliament. This committee, of course, has had no public hearings. I don't think it's the fault of the committee, because there's been an expectation that pieces of legislation, such as the Mine Health and Safety Amendment Act and the state-owned mining company bill, would have appeared before the committee, would have come to Parliament and would have been the subject, most likely, of public hearings. But the Committee of the Fifth Parliament has been extremely active in its oversight program and, as the Chair said, has succeeded in visiting all nine of the provinces, which was something which was not achieved by the Fourth Parliament. The research findings from looking at the meetings indicate that most committee time is devoted to budget cycle activities. This is a crucial oversight role for Parliament under the Constitution, as required by the PFMA and the Money Bills Act, and the cycle of activities illustrated in this budget document, which was made available last week, shows the cycle of activities. And you can see that there's an opportunity for the committee almost every month to have a meeting devoted to the budget cycle and to making sure that that the department is complying with the Money Bills Act and the PFMA. In fact, it takes up 12 or more meetings per year, this function. And if that is what constitutes holding the department to account, the committee does that. However, I think it is very important to take note that although there are all these budget-centered activities of the committee, this portfolio committee oversees only 0.2% of the expenditure of the national budget. The budget of the department is about 2 billion rand, whereas the budget of the country is trillions, and the department basically has a 0.2% share of that budget. Despite that fact, the committee devotes more of its time to oversight of the financial and performance legislation than on any other issue. It is 46% by my estimate. This is obviously at the expense of a focus on oversight over mining legislation. Less time is available for issues critical for the mining sector. There are only 10 meetings per year in my calculation available. And this is for a department which performs exceptionally well on the financial and performance measures which are set in the budget and in the PFMA and in the Money Bills Act. The department has a record, I think it had 82% performance an 82% performance, positive performance record last year. It was 87% the year before. They have 100% expenditure of their budget in the last 2 years. The Auditor General has found all of their measures to be in line with the requirements. And, of course, they've had a clean audit, an unqualified audit as a standard achievement of the department. There is no way to measure whether this excellent result is due to the activities of the committee. It could be the case, but we must remember that the Auditor General provides a very strong level of discipline for the department, and in fact so does the legislative system with the PFMA and the requirements for regular reporting and budget cycles and transparency in what's being planned for and so forth. No, I'm prepared to allow that the committee has performed exceptionally well in its responsibility in holding the department to account with respect to these financial laws. But while the department performs very well on all the budget indicators, the mining industry itself remains in a state of crisis. There are 65,000 fewer jobs in the mining sector since 2012, when the National Development Plan was adopted and when a new plan was put forward for the actual growth of employment in the mining industry. There have been perpetual problems with court cases, the double issuing of licenses, challenges to the Mine Health and Safety Act Section 54 notices, and difficulties with the implementation of the One Environmental System, which the committee viewed when it went on its recent oversight. The critical mining PAKISA initiative of the President, which has a whole lot of projects which are designed to revive and give direction to the mining industry, actually hasn't reached a point of being formally launched. I understand that a lot of the companies are working on the projects, but it hasn't been formally launched as a program for rescuing or for promoting the mining industry. And then the industry has been subject to these very public disagreements on the mining charter. So what I'm saying is that this is a department that performs perfectly when it comes to the measures that are placed against it by Parliament, but it performs very weakly when judged against the standard of the National Development Plan or the perhaps the requirements in the Act for the department to be a true custodian of the natural resources of the country, ensuring access to the natural resources and that there are equitable benefits from mineral resources. The committee has covered all the areas in the 2014 operational plan, but there are problems with follow-up and hence with the effectiveness of the PCMR in holding the DMR to account. The research conclusion is that the operational plan needs to be revised, and there's a need to identify particular priority issues and follow through each in a planned program. What happens is that an issue is raised in the committee and questions and follow-up issues emerge, but it may be a year or more before that issue comes back to the committee again for follow-up. And as I think we saw in the meeting last week when we dealt with the committee dealt with derelict and ownerless mines, the department was again asked to come back with the same information it was asked for in 2015, which was, the question was, what is the government as a whole spending on the problem of derelict and ownerless mines? That question was put to the department in 2015, and at the last meeting they said no, they needed another 6 months in order to pull that information together. And the reason for that was, I think, the lack of a system of proper follow-up. Not criticizing the committee, it's a diagnosis. The second issue is to question the juggernaut influence of the budget cycle in the work of the committee. This image of the juggernaut comes from the Hindu religion, and figuratively it's an institution or practice or idea to which a person is blindly devoted or ruthlessly sacrificed. And I understand that people would throw themselves under the wheels of this car and be crushed to death. And that's perhaps an ungenerous characterization of the budget cycle, but I think it has an element of truth to it. The possible framework for the portfolio committee, I've pulled under five headings. The first is combating the theft of our mineral resource wealth, which is seen in the illegal mining, the growth and expansion of illegal and illicit mining, and is also seen in the issues of transfer mispricing, the BEPS, the base erosion and profits shifting meetings that have been held with the Finance Committee. So this issue of mineral resource wealth theft is a major concern for the industry and for the department. Second is dealing with the environmental impacts of mining. Thirdly, with the social impacts. And fourth, moving towards zero harm, occupational health and safety in the mining sector. All four of these issues have been covered, I think, with varied, but that they've all been covered over the last 4 years. The fifth issue, however, which is securing the future for the mining and petroleum industries, is one where, in my view, is the main area of oversight weakness, interpreting the results of the research which we've done. The proposal here is that we've got the budget cycle, and the oversight or the accountability of the department is held up against the budget cycle. Well, my suggestion is that it should also be held up, you should also evaluate the department against the life cycle of mines. The life cycle of the budget is 1 year, the life cycle of a mine can stretch over decades. But you have to make sure that there are proper laws and procedures applied by the department in each of the stages of the life cycle of a mine. That is, in the exploration, the prospecting stage, the assessment of the deposits, the development of the mine, which takes the mine to the point where production begins, then the long period, hopefully, of production and mining and dealing with all of the social and environmental issues that come from that, and then the closure of the mine at the end of its life. And really, the department needs to be evaluated against how it applies the legislation set by Parliament in each of these areas. The Council for Geoscience deals with the exploration and prospecting scientific work. The assessment of the deposits is obviously done by the DMR when it allocates rights to minerals. The development and production in mining is supported by the research from MINTEC and from the CSIR. I see that the CSIR has been given a budget, has been given money in this year's budget for mining research, and then to ensure that there are adequate funds for rehabilitation. The mining PAKISA, which involves the private sector very much, deals with the development, production and mining stages. The One Environmental System encompasses the whole life cycle. The role of the state-owned mining company is also a cross-cutting issue, as is the requirement that the DMR monitors and enforces the laws. And then there's the question of mining taxation and the royalty regime, and basically asking the question about what happens to the wealth from the mines that goes to the government. It's about 7 billion rand a year goes to the government in royalty payments. This is in addition to taxes. What happens to that? Should it be put in a sovereign wealth fund, or should, as perhaps it is spent now, it just goes into the general budget and because of the way our budget is prioritized, it is prioritized on issues of delivery, such as education, such as infrastructure development, health, and so forth. It may not be inappropriate to put all of the money off from the mines into those activities. Education certainly could be made more productive. It's hard to argue that at the present time that the education expenditure is a fully productive use of the money that comes from mining. So just to give a bit of detail on what a focus on the life cycle of mines could mean for the future of the committee or for the program of the committee, it's just to illustrate with two issues. The first being junior miners. The start of the mining cycle, the start of the value chain for mines, starts with junior mining companies that explore, find prospects, usually they sell them on. But without that phase of junior mining, it means that the future of the mining industry is in doubt. And that is actually the situation we're facing at the moment, where the big mining companies are content to just run with the stuff they've got on at the moment. And for various reasons connected with uncertainty or whatever you might say, they are not fully engaged in the task of developing the future of the industry. They're just making the most of what they've got at the moment. That's the nature of the beast, I think. But it is necessary for the country to support the growth of junior miners so that we have a growing mining industry in the future. And this is something that the committee could focus on. Perhaps asking people from the junior mining in Darba, which is a recent development, to come and brief the committee or give their views on how the DMR is performing in this area and how matters could be improved. The second issue is to look at the other end of the value chain, the closure, the liquidation, the rehabilitation of mines, which has been touched on by this committee several times, particularly with the Pomodzi, the Aurora liquidation, and how all those workers were left bereft as a result of corrupt liquidators and difficult conflicts between the laws on mining and on companies. And then also dealing with the Lily mine and this issue of business rescue, which has, because of the changes in the Companies Act, has come to be something which is actually widely used in the mining sector. And there needs to be it is appropriate for the committee to question how the conflicting laws on companies, on liquidation, on mining, work together or don't in order to secure the best result in the case where mines have to close, to ensure that mining is truly sustainable and that it has a positive legacy for the people on the planet. The suggestion I have for beginning to look at these issues would be to consider public hearings. So the recommendation is that the PCMR should develop an oversight model for the DMR that stands next to, not in place of, it's in addition to the budget cycle oversight. That it could be based on the idea of the life cycle of a mine, just to give direction to the concerns. And it can involve public participation from stakeholders. I think that it is also true that a lot of the information on which the committee comes to judge the department actually comes from the department itself, or comes from the Department of the DTME, Department, what is it? Monitoring and Evaluation in the Presidency. So it is actually a very limited opportunity for the committee to get information from communities, from NGOs, from outside, from mining companies, about how the department is doing in its work. These are issues that are covered in oversight quite well, but it's possible to have public hearings. The Trade and Industry Committee has also had quite an interesting series of what they call colloquia, where they invite stakeholders and then give them each 45 minutes, and then they have a discussion which involves not just the committee but also the participants in the colloquium. Those are two models which are used in Parliament and which would be possible for the committee to consider. And again, the suggestion which I would put forward is that looking at promoting junior miners in exploration would be one positive development, and dealing with mine closure, liquidation and rehabilitation would be another necessary, useful intervention that the committee could make. Chair, that is my presentation, and I'll have the questions.
Addition today you are now old.
That's why
I'm saying today on our own. I thought the kind of addition from your team, Dr. Nicole.
I like how they're sitting.
Honourable members, any questions of clarity for now? Honourable Schmidt? You are the only one. Honourable Sigelin? Honourable Mandel? Okay. Matala? Honourable Schmidt? Honourable Matala? Okay. Why don't I start this for a change today?
Yeah.
Honourable Mandela?
Yes,
Honourable Biginin? Honourable Matala? Honourable Schmidt?
Chair, just like that. You can't change.
Okay. There's something called with the power vested in me.
Thank you,
Honorable Chair. And appreciate the presentation by Dr. Nicole. I would like to first and foremost, Honourable Chair, just to ascertain the methodology used into coming up with this comprehensive analysis of the work we are doing. Particularly on page 7, it talks of the 5th Parliament versus the 4th Parliament. So I would like to know, in terms of that slide, are you looking at the first year of 5th Parliament and 4th Parliament? Or are you looking at the first 2 years? Are you looking at the first 3 years? Because clearly 5th Parliament hasn't ended for it to be compared to the 4th Parliament. So how did you come about the methodology of comparing that? Because you then take a 46% and versus the 52% of this period. I would like to understand the methodology used in and around that. But also the work we do as Parliament, at least as a committee, is informed and versed around the budget cycle of the proceedings in Parliament, as illustrated in the slide there. So I would like to understand, if our work is not coming out of that cycle, what other things are we supposed to be earmarking? For example, even if we are to dive into a public hearings and emphasizing that it will emanate from the State of the Nation's address if there are issues of mining that we have picked up, of the it will come out from the budget speech if there's issues we've been able to pick up on there, but also in the annual performance of the department and its stakeholders. So outside that budget cycle, there's very few other things that I think as a committee we are able to initiate on ourselves. But also, you speak on page 11, Honorable Chair, the problems with court cases. And there's one thing that has grabbed my attention, the double issue of licenses. Who's issuing licenses? Because under my own understanding, it's a DMR, and if it's DMR, there's only one person I'm mandated into issuing licenses. So are we ending up with double issuing of licenses? And if these cases exist, where do they exist? How many of these cases do we have for us then as a committee to begin challenging and questioning DMR on them? Theft of our mineral resources. Who's stealing? Who's the thieves? There are illegal operations that are underway, quite a complex situation that needs to be dealt with in an interministerial and interdepartmental approach. So, are we correct to coin it as a theft of mineral resources, or just is it a lack of an interministerial or interdepartmental approach to combating this illegal mining? I think I'll pause there for now, Honorable Chair. But lastly, let me just also inquire, and I think this one emanates from our Western Cape study, Western Cape oversight, Honorable Chair. This one environmental system, is it actually in effect? Is it truly being implemented? Or there are actually three or four or even five different environmental systems in place? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Chair, let's really welcome the report. You see, Chair, there's a matter here that has been raised. I think it's proper. In page 3, which is it's a correct assessment that we need to trace all questions. And once we do that, we take stock of it. To keep track and follow it up is very much critical to do that. But I think we need to put it somewhere at the end of the day. We must do that. You see, you have members of parliament who come here to do a lot of activities here from Monday or for Tuesday and Thursday. But we have staff that comes on Monday to Friday. We are able to evaluate ourselves to say, did I assist the committee in terms of my duties? So I'm trying to say that whilst we were doing this work for us, very nice one, but it also pinned us back because we have this figure that look at to us at the end of the day, look at to you. So I'm trying to be very positive in dealing with this particular matter. That's one part, the issue of keeping threats. There's someone that we have to do that. The other one, I think the last one, which is I'm happy how you find it. It's page 12. In conclusion, particular research conclusion. We asked a similar question for Dereset and ownerless mines. The issue of spending that we asked in 2015, we asked it again here last week. Now, I'm trying to illustrate my point that I raised earlier on, that within the 2 years or a year, let's say we've changed content advisor at that particular time, now having a new one, he might not really know what the issues we're dealing with in 2015, but I think there's someone that have to deal with that. I was just illustrating that earlier point. Chair, I will also agree with you 100% this issue of illegal mining, because it costs our country a lot of money. And I think it's important that we have to find a way of dealing with it. There were some proposals raised in the series of committees that we had, how we can combat that. There's an issue that we can do our own operation on our own. We look, you know, evaluate, and we look how can we reutilize them where we need to be. Because our view, the workers of mine, they go back when they are not working and start again to do their illegal of mine. It means there's some that we can have from that particular area. I think we need to have some kind of proposals. Now, we raise it. Now, I think it's working or it's not working. It must also come to the committee now again to see how to implement that. I think one day, Chair, I think we need to wear Omakarab and start to do this work. You know, maybe we try to assist. Because we need to be able to see, when we propose something, we need to go to deeper to find out how we can implement it at the end of the day. Come some kind of proposal. The last one is the issue of CSIR. I'm very happy with this one because we raised it when you arrived here. We were saying we need to do more research work so that we're able to say these minerals are here for 20 years to come, for 100 years to come. And also, we can check what kind of resources do we have in this particular country, in each and every province. Now, if we are raising those matters, say we can do that. Now, we might say it's a good thing you use CSIR to do it. What about geoscience, for instance? Because geoscience, our belief is that Namibia, Botswana, and all of that, they've researched, they find out their mines, and then now those countries are making good, progressing very well now, through that work which was done 10 years ago by geoscience. Now, when we use CSIR, are we going to benefit the same results? Because geoscience, in my view, they are hands-on, they are able to understand what is taking place. Or you want somebody to sit in an office and do that thing through computer. I'm just making something like that. Instead of investing on our own. When we don't have money, we go to geoscience. When we have money, we give to another researcher where this is CSIR. I'm not saying, I'm not sure there are areas of operation that they are. But I wanted to raise those particular areas. Thank you very much. I'm not going to come there.
Honorable Masala.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I've been covered by my colleagues here with regard to posing questions to Dr. Nicole and his team. But there is one question, Honorable Chair, with regard to the I didn't get Dr. Nicole with regard to this oversight follow-up. Can you explain it clearly to me, Honorable Mr. Dr. Nicole? Who is actually doing a follow-up? Is it the portfolio committee that must do a follow-up with regard to oversight visit? Or is it the DMR that must make a follow-up? Because in my view, we can't do the second follow-up or the second oversight visit to a particular area that we visited. Because as far as I know, the committee hold the DMR to account. I thought in my own view is that those people who must do a follow-up is the DMR. Can you maybe clarify? I might be lost with regard to this or follow-up visit, for oversight follow-up. Can you clarify that statement? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's a very, very valuable contribution by the committee, the staff of the committee. I think we indicated at some stage that there's a disconnect between what the department does and the mining industry out there in real terms. And I think we bridged that divide by the oversight visits. But we leave it there. We go to Western Cape and we leave it. We go to Limpopo and we leave it. And there's probably, you probably can't do much more. But, you know, I suppose one can follow up with the department and say, following our visit, here's our report, here's our concerns. Please give us feedback as to these reports or these issues which we have seemingly been made aware of, which may be totally out of context, which may be totally the view of the mining industry and not DMR, or the view of the DMR and not Department of Environmental Affairs, or whichever. So I think that's one thing which we could possibly consider doing, is some feedback to the department to say, is our context, is what we're seeing correct, even if it's in writing, even if it's in a 10-minute response from the department, I don't know. But I think the other thing, of course, is I do get the impression, and I speak for myself, that I don't think we understand the MPRDA and the regulations issued in terms of the MPRDA. After many years in the committee, I sort of getting a hold of a copy of the regulations issued, and you'll be surprised how much information is in the regulations pertaining to closure, pertaining to financial provisions, how it's determined, and it made me understand a lot more about the mining industry by reading the regulations, not reading it, maybe that's an overstatement, by gleaning through the regulations. You get a better impression as to what the department's supposed to be doing than in the Act. The Act is a very rough guidance. The regulations are more specific. So maybe we could look at a kind of a session where someone goes and says, this is the purpose of the MPRDA. This is the understanding of custodianship. What is custodianship? We don't understand what's custodianship. Very few people, even so-called learned people out there, understand what's custodianship. So we are trying to execute oversight function, which we don't even understand what the role of custodianship is, what the department, this department, should be ensuring doing. Following the Western Cape visit and on the one environmental system, I think Mr. Madela, and I'm trying to put it in a positive way, one environmental system came into operation on the 8th of December 2014, if I remember correctly. And I also didn't really appreciate the consequences of that until the Western Cape visit. But there is a disagreement. I don't want to call it a war, but let's call it a disagreement between the two departments, Department of Environmental Affairs and Department of Mineral Resources, about who implements what and what is necessary. And it has to do with environmental authorizations. It has to do with, does the department, in executing the MPRDA, have to follow the NEMA regulations? And if so, does it have to issue environmental authorization? If so, what content should it use? And should it be directly in accordance with NEMA's principles? Although they have to apply NEMA, but does it? Can it? Can it really apply NEMA? I don't know. But those are issues of ideology, let's call it that, for lack of a better word. Points of departure between mining and DEA, which we don't understand, and I was very little aware of it before the Western Cape visit. Illegal mining, I am sorry to say, but illegal mining is probably one of the most important issues. Not because of loss to government in terms of revenue. That also, I think it's millions of rand, if not, I don't want to exaggerate, but it's probably millions of rand per day, possibly. I don't know.
The Chamber says gold is 5 billion a year.
5 billion rand a loss per year in gold only. Only in gold. I mean, I can't confirm it. I can just say what the Chamber of Mines and James Lorimer says. But there's hundreds of millions of rand lost. But besides that, that's not the biggest issue. Despite the loss, the biggest issue is there's a second illicit economy on the rise. Mister, if you don't agree with me, won't agree, if an illicit economy takes place, it has an impact on your crime rate. It has an impact on the kind of crime you are dealing with, because it becomes crime in terms of theft of money or theft, lack of tax. But it resorts into lawlessness by communities. Because, yeah, as you know, in Burgers Ford, communities are supporting the illegal miners against the police. And what does that say? And if you have other parties, political parties, benefiting or possibly, arguably benefiting from it, it's one step further. So these things unfortunately lead to other unintended consequences of which we don't even understand or know about. So it does not just stop with the loss of revenue. It stops with the societal impact on a certain community, if not communities. And if you leave that, that leads to other issues which in the long run you cannot and will not be able to control. So that's the loss is not the issue. It is the consequences of illegal mining that becomes a problem. I think I've said enough. Thank you, Monsieur. And then, of course, can I just add to it? I made a note about the mining charter. I don't know whether we know enough about the mining charter. Really know enough about the mining charter and how it's implemented by the industry, or lack of implementation. I know there was a Kobodo report at some stage requested by the department as to the lack or the so-called lack of the mining industry. Mr. Nicol, I think it was a Kobodo report. And we don't understand the report. I don't really understand the report. I don't understand the consequences. We say the mining industry is delivering or not delivering. You ask any one of us around here on which issue and why and how much, we don't know. And we are trying to... So basically what I'm saying is, are we going to take a very narrow approach to oversight of the DMR? That's fine. You can go look at his policy. You can go look. But we're missing the whole sector we're missing. But that's the other thing I also made a note of. And the real life out there, in my view, is when there's a response to an issue. And that is when the DMR or the minister makes a statement in respect of a certain issue. We don't even see those statements. You can go look at on the DMR base website. You can go look at it. There's a whole list of, I don't know, there's tens of statements issued over the years, if not hundreds of statements. But is that ever brought to the committee to see, is there issue? Because that is real life impact. Why has a minister issued a statement? Why has DMR issued a statement on an issue? We don't see it. We don't know about it. It goes, we may agree, we may not agree. So what I'm saying is there's a lot of issues out there which we could consider. I'm not saying we should. We could consider in our normal activities which could enrich our experience and our knowledge. Thanks.
Dr. Nicol? Thanks, Chair.
With regard to the methodology used to... come up with these graphs. It is very much a rough cut. It's based on looking at the meetings that have taken place. We have a list of the meetings and the agendas for the meetings. There are 136 meetings of the Portfolio Committee on Mineral Resources. The fourth parliament had 140 meetings, and those meetings, the agendas and everything about those meetings is reflected by the parliamentary monitoring group in their website, where they have listed all of the meetings, they've given all of the presentations, you can even get an audio of the presentations. They provide an excellent window into the work that the committee has done, in fact, since 1998. So what I did was I went to the Parliamentary Monitoring Group website, I downloaded every one of those meetings, and I made an analysis about what the content was, and I put it onto a spreadsheet, and then I pressed a button, and I came up with that graph. It's not totally scientific in the sense that when a meeting is discussing like the third quarter report, there are other issues that are raised by members, and in fact, the members managed to do oversight of a lot more issues than are recorded in the agenda. But I used those agenda items just to give an impression of how the committee covers the issues. The budget cycle does define the work of the committee. And that is the decision of Parliament. The Constitution sets up a number of requirements for Parliament, what its functions are in terms of oversight, scrutiny of executive action, and so forth. And the Constitutional Court has found that it's Parliament who may decide how to do that. The fact is that our Parliament, through its rules, has decided to do it by using the budget cycle as the way into discovering what departments are doing. In many departments, that may be the correct, right way to do it. In the case of the Department of Mineral Resources, however, if you use that window, the window of the budget, to come into an understanding of what the department does, you find that it's a perfect department. It's an almost perfect department. Whereas when you look outside and you look at what's happening in the mining industry, the view is not one of perfection. And so there is, I believe, an opening in terms of the Constitution to look at issues that are not framed by the budget cycle. On the problems with court cases and the double issuing of licenses, I don't have to hand a list of all the cases, but there are many cases, especially in the early years after the MPRDA came in, where the department would grant a license for the same mineral on the same piece of land to two different companies. This has been in the Constitutional Court most recently in the Aquila case, where the department gave an overlapping mineral right to a state-owned company and to an Australian Chinese company. And that has had to go through the courts, and it's all because of a mistake that was made by a clerk in the regional manager's office, I think in 2007, where he allowed these two... the court found that he ought to have rejected this one an application because it didn't meet the standards of the MPRDA. But he accepted the application, and then someone else accepted an application from this other company, which resulted in the DMR giving rights to minerals to two different companies over the same land. And this is just one example. There are a lot of examples where this has happened. The reason was because of the problems with the SAMRAD system, which was not... We're aware that the industry and commentators think the SAMRAD system doesn't work, while the Department of Mineral Resources tells us that it does work. So it's a problem of it's a real difficulty in working out what the true situation is here. But this is one example of the double granting where the SAMRAD system hasn't worked and has failed to the extraordinary detriment of South Africa's reputation as a mining country. Theft. Okay, maybe I'm certainly simplifying the issue by saying theft of our mineral resources. But that's what it is. you have illegal miners, illicit miners, stealing, appropriating minerals that are not theirs. They are under the custodianship of the state. The state has not given permission to those people to take the minerals. They are stealing them. On the other hand, you have these big companies that are appropriating profits from their mining, and they are illegally shifting those profits overseas, avoiding paying tax in South Africa. We don't know what the extent of either of these two illegal activities are, but they are theft. And I think that maybe it's just a handle to use to try and get people to understand how important these two issues are for the mining sector. I do take Mr. Schmidt's point, however, that the impacts of these illegal activities are societal. They're not only on people, they're also on the environment, where you have a lot of these illegal mining activities causing huge environmental damage, even after it has been corrected by the Council for Geoscience or the mine itself. On the oversight of the One Environmental System, the confusion that Mr. Mandela expresses is general across the industry. Because the One Environmental System is applied differently by the different regional offices of the DMR. So in effect, there are 9 One Environmental Systems. Mining companies report that they have different standards they have to follow depending on who the inspector is. So the system is one which is still finding its feet, and it is an appropriate area for investigation it's an appropriate area for concern by the committee in looking at the work of the DMR. I think that emerged so clearly from the oversight visits to the Western Cape. On who should keep track of the issues in meetings, well, I think there's a need, therefore, in a proper administrative system. On the one hand, the committee secretary records the minutes and the resolutions of the committee, which often involve issues that require follow-up. The Department of Mineral Resources employs a person who is called the Parliamentary Liaison Officer, who is, in my understanding, is required to attend all of the meetings of the committee and to report back to the minister on what went on in the committee. Again, I'm not aware that any of the parliamentary liaison officers that have served the committee in the time that I've been on it have effectively played that role. My suggestion is that the minutes of the resolutions of the committee are provided to the parliamentary liaison officer on a weekly basis, as soon as the minutes are adopted, to remind them of the issues that have come up in the committee. I think that the other issue, it is the responsibility of the committee staff to keep a track on the issues that have been discussed in the committee, and then to remind the committee of issues that need to be followed up. It is a staff role, and I understand that MPs are not able to devote all of their time to the portfolio, and I think there's a need for staff support in that regard. This would apply also to the question of the derelict and owner's mines. All I can say there is that this list, which was distributed today of the outstanding issues, it has been given to the department on at least 3 occasions. It was given to them at their request at the end of last year. So I'm at a loss to understand how they say that they're not aware of these issues, some of which, you know, were pertinent questions posed in 2015. On the oversight and the implementation of the oversight, there were 2 questions that came up about this. When the committee goes on an oversight visit, it produces an oversight report which goes to the National Assembly. Now, as far as I'm aware, most of those reports are just accepted for noting. They're not adopted by the National Assembly, and therefore the recommendations don't have the weight of Parliament behind them. I think it's something that the committee needs to address, because, I mean, what's the point of going on an oversight visit and coming up with all these recommendations, and then it's not put in a form that is recognizable as a view of Parliament? Surely, if okay, that's a view, that the committee should make certain that the recommendations that are put forward are actually adopted by Parliament, and they then acquire a new weight. The oversight meetings that I refer to in the graph there, and the oversight follow-up, is two things. It's firstly where the committee meets together and discusses what should go into the recommendations. In other words, they've been on the oversight, the follow-up on the oversight is to decide what are the recommendations, and those are then put into the report. Also, the committee has been on a number of oversight visits where they have themselves done a follow-up. If you remember visiting the not the quarry, but the management of the Ikwezi quarry in Mthatha, where the committee actually brokered a series of engagements between the mine owner, the community, the chief even came to a couple of the meetings of the committee, and the community, to try and sort out this difficulty which the committee observed in an oversight visit. That was a very practical, hands-on example, which I agree, it can't be the model for oversight, because the committee needs to accept that other people should do this work. But it was a very useful role, I think, it played in bringing those, the department and the mine owner together. On the CSIR, this is a question which I don't understand. When we look at the life cycle of the mines, you'll see that on the left there, the exploration and prospecting, that is the Council for Geoscience. The CSIR is involved in a different part of the value chain. They're involved in the value chain where the mining is actually taking place. Mintec does the processing, and the CSIR, it's not supposed to be work with computers, although there may be computers underground. They're supposed to be working on new methods of mining that allow more of the resource to be taken out and for mining to be safer and done properly. There was a thing called the Chamber of Mines Research Organization, which the industry paid for many years. And that responsibility is now with the CSIR. They also, if you remember, the Deputy Minister spoke to us about the Klopfersbos CSIR facility, where they check on the gases that come out of the mines and try and provide methods for doing that. So that's what this is. It's relevant, useful work. But why they don't spend more money on the Council for Geoscience, I don't understand. This has been a recommendation of the committee for a long time. They're actually cutting the budget of geoscience in this new budget. They are not increasing the staff. They say they are in the budget, but they are not. It's like the first step. If the first step in the step ladder is broken, you can't walk up the other steps. But this is an issue which the DMR has not succeeded in convincing the Treasury of. And I don't know what can be done about it, because the lack of funding for the Council for Geoscience is a criminal act of negligence for a custodian, the custodian of the natural resources, not to be concerned with the issues of exploration and prospecting to a very high degree, to replace, as the mines are mined out, there's a need to replace the facilities, the resources. I've covered that issue. Many of Mr. Schmidt's comments, their comments, which I think one of particular value is that relating to what is custodianship, which is an issue that the courts have not approached. And I mean, that comes to the nub of the issue. What if you if you're the custodian? You're not the owner of the mineral rights. You're the custodian for the benefit of the people. And at the moment, I think all stakeholders are agreed that people are not benefiting adequately, fairly, equitably from the mineral resources we have in this country. What should be done to hold the DMR to account on that issue? The mining charter, that is the Moloto report, I think it is. Yeah, this is an issue where the committee has actually posed a particular question to the department. When the department gave its report back on the summary results, and then the committee said, we're not going to deal with this issue until we have the outstanding information that was requested. And that information requested was, which are the mines that have not complied with the mining charter, and in what respects have they not complied with the mining charter? That information has been requested from the department on several occasions, and it has not been forthcoming. So the mining charter and its implementation, the information has been requested from the department, it's not been given. Mr. Schmidt, you recall those long hearings which were held in 2011 on the mining charter. And I think how clear it was there that there are huge areas of vagueness and uncertainty in the mining charter on what is expected of the mining companies. That was really the main point that came out from those hearings. And the committee recommended that the DMR and the mining industry get together and resolve their differences. And what happens? 2 years, 3 years later, there are all sorts of court cases. The committee tried to intervene and say, this is an issue that needs to be sorted out. And this was in 2012. And yet in 2016, 2017, we find there's a whole lot of court cases. I don't know if I've missed out anything else. I don't know if you want to say anything else. I can't see why if there's a request to the department that all press statements should be given to the committee secretary for
email today. Sure.
Yeah. Okay. I believe that you can make that request to them anyway. It's not very easy to get the information, but I've now gone onto the list of getting, like, I get all of the labor data and all of the financial data that they have on their database. I get that on a quarterly basis. I could get it monthly if I wanted. But the DMR publications department is actually quite efficient. I'd only done it with respect to the statistics, but I imagine that they would be open to providing members with copies of the press statements. I mean, I can't speak for them, so, yeah.
Okay. In addition,
maybe I can just explain the fact of following up on inquiries, because the best that we can do is to capture any recommendation from the committee or request and make sure that the secretary has it. But if the department does not respond, there isn't much that as a parliamentary staff member can do to make the department to respond.
Any further questions or clarity? Look, I think the first thing that we must say, I don't know whether is there any committee that does this. We don't have a framework. but we have to do it from time to time to assess ourselves. Maybe down the line we'll find the framework and the formula, which to me I would suggest that Dr. Nicole, for this report, unfortunately, when I go forward to say this is, I would know if there's a similar report that you are requesting. We can. I don't want to talk about to channel, but I would love that we must have a concrete formula that you can suggest, that you can look at, so that we know. You see, even now when we are sitting here, I think to me, the manner in which the committee has to work, there are other things that, one, you can't finish by asking and then get an answer tomorrow and then you say what that. Let me give an example. The complex nature that you have on the one environmental system, I think all of us, we will finally, no matter what we do, we will come to this conclusion that, one, there might be a different interpretation of the one environmental system, both by the DMR and also by other departments below, due to the devolution of responsibilities. Unfortunately, DMR is one department. Other departments, for instance, environment, can devolve up to the level of the metros. But also linked to that, you will not know even with the between DMR and the main Department of Environmental Affairs as a national department, there is the question of mandate and resources that seem not to be going together. So I'm just making that example that whatever you could do here, if we're to say by measurements, I'm just thinking here, how many rights that the SAMRAT system has given. It may say, okay, we've given, just for an example, 100 this year, but are they really rights in the sense of operation, or there's a compliance issue beyond the rights that has been given? So that the efficacy of the system, it can be measured. One other example is that if you deal with the issue, I take the point, I think it's Honorable Schmidt who has raised, but there is a serious one. If you look on the issue of the illicit financial flows, it's something that affects, it's more like it affects us, but authority is not with us. But it's a process that we're participating. Whether we're being effective or not is another issue, probably another. But it's effectively something that is handled mainly by the Treasury, which is the Standing Committee on Finance, as well as Trade and Industry. Those are the main active. But it's on us. Not only us, but mainly it's on us. How do we measure the issue of illegal mining? It can be, it's another issue. I'm sure whether we deny it, but I can sense one thing, and I think I will agree also with Honorable Schmidt, that can we really say illegal mining is a responsibility of the Department of Mineral Resources? How? The first part is understandable, whether to find legislation that will regulate and bring about formalization of illegal mining. But there are other elements that go beyond that, which require intelligence services, I even said, which require law enforcement agencies, that goes beyond even the judiciary, what role it can be able to play. It requires a multi teams. And the question is, if, for instance, a mining company, like when we're in Velcom, a mining company can make a declaration that there was a war that was being fought here. No matter how much you put your regulation, the fact of the matter is that the police themselves say, no, when we were there, we couldn't stand the firing going from the other side towards us. So it's no longer an illegal trade now. It's a theft for war. Now, my view is that we have to develop better mechanisms, because
I'm sure even when we go, I'm not trying to preempt, when we go on this, what we are proposing, the oversight, we'll get the same story, that from national, these task teams that are set up, is either people are exchanging, are changing names, this one today, or I don't attend this meeting. But one thing for sure that you'll get as a guaranteed answer is that they don't trust themselves when they are meeting here, because the moment they finish the strategy here, it's already leaked. Others will even receive death threats. So I'm saying that system, it will have to be split in a way that we can measure what is the primary responsibility that the committee is supposed to do, areas where there is collaboration that the committee is supposed to collaborate with other committees or something like that. I know, for instance, environmental affairs, every time you meet with them, they accuse us of being the worst, because they are working on the debt that we leave. They tell us that we are the worst polluters. Water affairs, water and sanitation, they say, if you want to know the criminals that we have got a crisis, ask this one. So I'm saying right through, I think agriculture also, they raise their reservations about the manner in which mineral resources is occupying the space. So I'm saying we have to measure that. And I think if to me I were to make that assessment, I would say this is one area that for now, from a distance, in the absence and the lack of mechanism, we have not done that much in terms of collaboration. I remember at some point I even received a letter to say, come, you see, this is the problem, we want, we are inviting you, come and listen. Now, there is no effective management of what we are supposed to do. The issue of the ex-mine workers, which is supposed to be DMR, labor, as well as health. So we have to find the mechanisms on how to measure these issues. And even say, if we are the lead, let's assume ex-mine workers were the lead, does that mean in order to do other things we must wait for others? Or does that mean we must just bulldoze, go it alone? I'm just trying to highlight the extent of work that, to me, we need to do. I take the point, I didn't know why I was going to make a joke, but it might be too sensitive a joke, on this thing that Dr. Nicolo was grieving about on Parliament, that sometimes what you take there is just noted in Parliament. To say, I'm not sure whether recommendations that come from Parliament are enforceable or are just recommendations, but it's okay. I know no offense to anyone. Maybe it's a matter that all of us, who have got a political responsibility, regardless of where we come from, to ponder on this question. I think it's much bigger than just the committee. It's a political consideration that we have to make. It has always been this thing, because I think sometimes I do get, you go there, and something will be sent to the department. Parliament on this date took this decision or resolved 1, 2, 3, 4. I've never been able to access the response that comes back to Parliament, or whether the response, when it comes back, it's supposed to come back to the committee through the chairperson. I think it's a matter that first we must investigate, maybe develop mechanisms that say, if a matter has gone through Parliament, shouldn't be our responsibility and duty as a committee now to then say there's a mandate that Parliament has taken. But can we do it on behalf of Parliament without Parliament conferring that authority and power to us? I think it's a matter that we have to find a way on what to do. Otherwise, if we sit, debate, take things to Parliament, and then after that we wait for Parliament with the hope that it will do follow-ups on our behalf, we might wait forever. I'm not saying that is not. So I would request that let's look at to what extent can we use that effect. I wouldn't say we are doing it wrong. I'm just saying maybe when we go to Parliament, and that's not an ill intention, it should be a way of getting authority to ensure that whatever we need needed to be processed with regards to that undertaking of an oversight is then
legitimized through the parliamentary process. So it doesn't become only our. I'm just looking at that. I hope someone legally can find a better mechanism. I never thought it in the way that you are suggesting. I think lastly, I take note of this thing. My issue is that having gone through, because I'll be frank and honest, I understood that part of that operational plan was that you've got 9 provinces and you are unable to go through all of them, it will be impossible to assess areas of intervention that needs to be done. But you do that simultaneously. You don't just go to the province to just look at the efficacy of mineral, but there must be a specific matter that drives you. For an example, when we went to Mpumalanga, there was a specific issue that we're dealing with. When we went to Northwest, I think primarily we're focusing on the effectiveness of the SLPs and so forth. Or it was the question, also it was post the violence that had taken place. So we're looking at the issues of stability. But we don't limit ourselves to the theme, because all that we're dealing with is mineral. I thought now what we needed to do, Dr. Nicole, is to then say, we have been now to all the 9 provinces. Here were the themes that were going in. Here are the recommendations that were made by the committee and submitted to Parliament, and they may have gone through. What then needs to be done? What are those key issues? I think one of them we've already identified as a key program. That's why I said, which might be very difficult to measure, is specifically the issue of illegal mining as a program on its own, which even if we undertake the oversight now, what is good about that oversight is that it's talking about what are the best solutions that we can have. It's no longer now trying to deal with the overall, but interventions and the best practices that we could have. Don't we need then to go through, I understand what you say, the operational plan has gone through its full cycle. I'm not sure whether we'll get that time to review that operational plan. I would suggest that maybe between now, if honorable members agree, accept it, let's allow the secretary, the researcher and the content advisor, obviously from I can also work with them, just to work on reviewing the operational plan, then come back and present what we think can be the way forward that this committee will be guided on, but with specific a focus on key issues, and then deal with the enforceability of what we think are areas where we might be lacking on. I think to me, if we cover the issue from that angle, it will be able to assist us to find a way. Lastly, it's unfortunate, Dr. Nicole, this is my take. We can take this budget cycle and say we can, I'm not sure how practical. I can tell you now, as I said to honorable members, I'm looking at what then we may have to do. The department, we are still going to brief members on that, because I had to phone the department and ask them, when are they tabling? Now if they say they're tabling on the 10th, the next thing that we're going to be forced now is to squeeze ourselves to do this thing as speedily as, and by the time we leave, we come back in May, by October we must be ready. Well, July, we're dealing with the first quarter report for the financial year. And it's not something that we can choose to not to do it. By October, we must go for the BRRR. So where can we get time to do? I think it's a concern that all of us we should, because there's so very little time to perform the work outside what is regulated. Because by the time you come for the third quarter, forget about the oversights that you are given in. By January, February, you must wait for the budget. You must go back to deal with the third quarter like we have done. So I'm just saying, can we find a way on how best can we manage and use the time in between very productively without making delays? and look at what are the other alternatives beside this thing of the formal committee meetings. What other mechanisms can we apply that all of us will be comfortable with, so that we are able to go forward? I think whether we like it or not, there is a plethora of activities that the committee can find it in. I would say even in that operational plan, let's take few key things that we can deal with them as primary issues that can make a determination of efficiency. The point that honourable members were talking about, I think it's an operational issue that we can link to say where there are areas where there have been statements that have been made, can we get the courtesy of sharing on those and see what can be done. But my fear is that it may even change the program to now ending up discussing what would have emerged. But I think as long as we've got a concrete program, it will be able to assist us. So I think that there is even some outstanding work that we talked about, even ourselves. When the department came to present here on the question of the mitigation, the agreement of principles, whatever you call it, on the mitigation against job losses, we said what the department, I think that is the point. When the department presented, we have not been able to get others who are signatories in that agreement on the commitments that were made, to what extent they've been able to go through that. So I thought, honourable members, if we then agree that if Dr. Nicole and his team can go out, develop a clear framework that has been suggested that we can use to measure our level of intervention as a committee, so that by the final, at the tail end, we can then say, this is what you agreed on, and this is now we're measuring you concretely on this. Point one. Point two, look on the key issues, programs that are more collaborative in nature, and then say, how can we begin to handle those? Look on the key programs that are programs that, what can I say, programs that are do or die, that defines us, and that will require us, regardless of what, not to miss the boat. I saw the point that we were talking about, the life cycle and so forth. The life cycle might be a little bit complex for now to understand. Can we get it precisely? What is it in concrete terms? What does it say? And then the last issue is that how do we make things enforceable from a committee point of view, but also from the parliamentary point of view, so that if we need all of us to go and engage our own political parties, our principals, we can then be able to say, can they consider this format? If it's us who do not understand how we are supposed to go to attend to those issues, we will also come back and say, no, the rules allow us that if you put something and it's recommended and it's taken over, you can then enforce it on behalf of Parliament, because Parliament have agreed on the matter. I think we just need certainty on what has to be done, but I think we must not hesitate to act on recommendations that we would have made and agreed on have been through the Parliament. I think that to me will be the issue. Any matter? I thought your hand was here up, Honourable Lorima.
Yeah, just from arising out of what you said, I agree that, for example, the enforceability thing is something that worries me. I know that when we go and see this illegal chrome mining in our upcoming oversight, we're going to find probably that somebody's told them that we're coming, so the machines are all parked for the day. I know that we'll see lots of evidence of illegal chrome mining. We'll report it, and nothing will happen. That's my view. So then I ask myself, well, we have to sort out this enforceability issue. Otherwise, what are we doing with our time? Secondly, I think Dr. Nichols' presentation made a very good point about understanding the wider industry, and I very much liked his idea about trying to get some information. Yes, the department runs everything on the books well. but then what's happening outside there? I think I like the idea of junior mining, the junior mining sector, which I don't know much about. Maybe we could schedule, and even if it's an extra day, like a Friday or something like that, to say, here's half a day, invite, put a colloquium together like a DTI, invite people to come and present. I think that would be very useful for us. Maybe that's where we start, the junior sector, because it's down that end of his timeline. And then, as far as the DMR not answering questions is concerned, perhaps this list of unanswered questions need to be sent to them again, and we need to say to them, please answer all questions, and then at this committee, we don't just let it go, but we take 10 minutes every month to say, well, what progress have they had in answering these questions? And every time they haven't answered and the month goes by, then we send back to them and say, we're still waiting for this, just so we don't allow them to forget stuff.
So didn't we say now, concretely, this committee,
The committee, it's a decision of the committee that all the outstanding issues or matters that this committee has agreed must, from this committee, be brought for the attention of the department, and then the response of the department be brought to this committee in the next meeting. Shouldn't we just put it like that? For instance, if the department says, we were not aware of this, now we're studying, we're going to respond, we come back. Let's not debate what could be. I'm just making a hypothetical exercise that they may come back and say, we are not aware. I looked at them myself, and most of them I know we've been trying to drum up. The reason we are even trying to think what is the better way of a presentation on SAMRAT and so forth is because it emanates from what we have asked for. We are finalizing the mining charter. We still have not received that information that there is a process of whatever consultation that is taking. We have not received the answer about the expired one, period. So I would suggest that let's just say, with all this information, we'll take it back to the department and say, you have not received answers. Can you please give us a response on the following matters? Also, where they were supposed to make presentation, I'm sure we will deal with that issue. We can write that as they prepare to present the budget, especially the Mine Health and Safety Council, we want to see the breakdown of the utilization in the previous financial year of the surplus that they've presented they were going to. So some of those issues we can guide them so that we give prior notice before they come here. I think Dr. Nicole can assist, and Guayama and see. So I thought that's the issue. The second one, I think we agree. Surely there must be a way. I can't say there's no way we can enforce what we recommended and Parliament has agreed. It's an authority. If that issue just requires maybe we may be helping many committees too, even Parliament itself. Just a motion in Parliament, if we succeed, a motion that is going to confer power and authority to committees where it affects them. I'm just saying, I don't know legal. I'm not a legal guru, but I find it very odd that you always go there, you recommend, and then the next thing, it's agreed, and then after that, you must wait for someone to account. But it's fine, Honourable Schmidt.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I always say if you give out of the cuff response, it's normally the wrong response, because you should have the statute or the rules in front of you. But I honestly think that, except for the exercise that we need to do, is to pull together all those relevant rules to see which are applicable. But we are, after all, an oversight committee. So I'd be very, very, I would find it at least as a kind of point of departure strange that any of our recommendations would have a binding effect on the committee. So I think that's the end result we'll land up with. But in trying to have some effect of our decisions or our recommendations, the minister, in my view, plays an important part, because the department is, I would guess, responsible. The minister is figurehead of that department. Political figure has a role to play to ensure that the oversight responsibilities of the for the committees are given effect to. Maybe I'm stating it incorrectly, but somewhere there's a role in the minister's office to ensure that whatever recommendations the portfolio committee make are given effect, or follow-up is done, or some form of a response is made. So I would suggest that whatever recommendations are made, whatever our request for a response on the outstanding issues, at least that be sent to the minister. The minister as an individual probably, I would guess, wouldn't have the benefit of our combined questions, responses, concerns, and although we, I would guess, sometimes think he knows, I don't think he always knows as much as we think he knows. So if we could get his cooperation in ensuring the department at least knows that he knows that we're not getting the necessary responses, might assist us in getting effect to ours, if you follow what I'm saying.
Let's just leave it. The issue for me is not a difficult one, because I think that one, if it's a recommendation directed to the department, we don't have all what Parliament does would be justifying what we have already agreed. So the law, as far as I know, the rules allow us, but they are accountable here. What becomes more complex, it's when what has been recommended goes beyond our area of oversight. Like I made an example, some of the issues, if you go to illegal mining, there's the issue of the foreign nationals that might be here that are quite central. Now, it requires Home Affairs, but to what extent can you be an oversight and make that to Home Affairs without taking the responsibility? I'm just saying those are the technical issues that we... Some of these things might be technically to a private person or private entity. But let's leave it at that level. I'm just saying we need to find a way where we can deal. This one, that's what we said. We will send these ones as they are and say we need responses. I think the point, Honorable Lorima, is correct, but I don't want us to put issues. I agree the question of the junior managers. That's why I said in that cycle, life cycle that Dr. Nicole is talking about, that consideration of the key programs must be factored in. It could be a colloquium, it could be public hearings. If we need to go back now, it says in your fourth parliament, there were public hearings on illegal mining. If we have to go back, then recall those, what emerged out of those public hearings, must do that on that program, so that we now move from the area of saying, finally, this is what is obtaining. So I don't want them, I also understand you had an interest on the program on junior mining. It's fine, but I'm just saying you must look into those things, so that we can factor them in. And I agree with you 100%. Maybe we may not necessarily have to take time off the committee. We may have to make extra effort on our own. If you say your colloquium, whatever, you put it a workshop, whatever, or you want to do public hearings for the benefit of junior miners and so forth, if you want to do that, you can do it over the weekend. We can sit. It's a committee that we'll finally have. That's why then that operational plan will have to reflect as populated by them, will have to reflect on the key areas. Can you agree, Honorable Members, on that process?
Yes.
They say officially someone must say I move and someone say I second.
I move that we proceed as outlined by you, Chair. Thank you.
Any seconder? Any seconder?
Mr. Chair, I second.
Okay, thank you. Not by coercion. No one is coercing anyone here. I don't understand these honorable members. Okay, honorable members, the minutes. That's the minutes of the 22nd February. Page 1. Page 2.
Page 3. Page 4. That's not the issue. Page 6. Sometimes the style of the minutes, it defeats me. My problem is that your minutes come, and I always have this fight even with boss. Your minutes come, will make us adopt the minutes at last. And then when we deal with the minutes in the next meeting, the minutes are before the resolution of the committee. That's where my dilemma, but I was told also it's a style of the minute. You see, page 6, page 5 is the minute, but below, above, it was the responses, it's the presentation. Then the resolution of the committee comes after the minute. As a procedure, someone who reads this and say, hey, these people, before they resolve, they then go back and read the minutes and deal with matters arising there and close them. And then go back to the item they were dealing with to then say, okay, what do we resolve in the next item? You see, now we've resolved. The minutes must come after.
Okay.
Because I fear that next time, again on what we resolve, there will be minutes and then the resolution of the committee will come after the minutes. I can't change the administrative system, but I find it very odd. Now I tried even with Ayan. I'm told that's how you were told you must do them. It's okay, but it's confusing. Honorable members, any matters arising? Oh. That's why you must sit next to me, always. My father was not going to remember that. Any move of the minutes? Honorable Mandela?
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to move for the adoption of minutes of the 22nd of February 2017 with amendments. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Nyambi?
Jefferson, I second with amendments.
Okay. Having said so,
as we go towards the tail end, honorable members, as I've said, we are trying to work on a very skewed system. When we were sitting, we were trying to prepare on how are we going to deal with the issue of the, what do you call this thing, of the APP's strategic plans as well as the budget. As I said, we checked with the department, they said they will be tabling on the 10th. And as the tables on the 10th, one, we're not even now sure, we still have to check with the AG, whether the AG would want also to brief the committee or make opinion as the AG. But besides that, you remember, we have to give the researcher, Dr. Nicole, time to also go through those tabled items, and we have to schedule and prepare for the department to come and make presentations. And I think the department has got how many inside its administration, policy, its regulation, its health and safety. There are about 4 programs for that period. Then you've got 5 entities. So that's 9 presentation, 10 with the one of Dr. Nicole. If the treasury, with the AG also, it will mean the 11. We had earmarked to take the 2 days off the 14th, ne, and the 15th. But by the look of things, we still have gonna go and check. By the look of things, that will mean we only have got half a day, because by the current program, there are plenaries. And from that, our last day will be the 15th as a committee, because the following week is the oversight. Except if we convert the oversight on that 3 days, ne? Because the 21st is a public holiday. So if we convert it there, the problem we're having, even if we were to go to committee, first we'll have to assert to be certain that honorable members will be available. But secondly, is whether members can just come just for 1 day, if it's a 1 day, to do the adoption. That is the other technicality. But what makes matters more complex, we don't have the next quarter, second quarter, ne? We don't have it for yet. Yeah, second term. It only ends on the oversight of the 21st of April. But looking at the calendar, on the 21st of April, the following week, I think on Thursday, it's a public holiday, April 27th, Freedom Day. On Monday, the following week, is the May Day, May 1. So we're still trying to grapple. We hope we're not going to be pushed in such a way that we don't know when we'll be expected, for instance, to now have debates on the... So we may even extend up to June. But we'll come back to members, especially when we have received the second term suggested program, and then see how we squeeze in. And we will give you finality also, but for now, we are planning to use Tuesday and Wednesday, which is the 15th, the 14th, and the 15th. After that, we'll give also almost the finalized program for the oversight next week. We intend also next week to bring the oversight report of the Western Cape, so that we can put those aside. So I'm just alerting you to understand that there's still more work we'll have to do in terms of managing the program. We find it very difficult to even plan beyond the 21st, because we don't know what it will be containing. So until we get that, which we promised it might be out by next week, we hope that when we come here next week, having worked on it, we will also make a concrete proposal. So now we may have to be very conservative with time next week, because there might be a number of issues that we are bringing in. On that note, thank you very much, honorable members. You are not released, but you are excused.
Thank you so much. Thank you.